ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
And that's right, everybody. Welcome back once again to another edition of the Best Seat in the House podcast. As always, I'm your host, Rob Kramer, joined by my co-host, Daniel Bobo Carlin. And this is episode 99. Next week, episode 100. Dan, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing fine. And you know who wants to give an early congratulations on us getting to 100 shows? My mom!
Oh my God. Yes. And we're off and running, man. I can't believe it. 100 episodes, man. It's crazy. It doesn't feel like we've been doing it for that long, right?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like, but just time goes by quick. I mean, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, the time over the course, not just our show, but I'm seeing players get into the like various sports Hall of Fames that I remember as rookies. You know how weird that felt when I saw like an example. He's probably going to be. He's not eligible for Hall of Fame yet, but he's gonna. It's inevitable. He's gonna be. As far as I see, definitely should be in the Hall of Fame. But anyway, when I was at Eli Manning's number retirement, the day they retired Eli Manning's number, I'm at that Giants game that day, right? Seeing that number retirement ceremony made me feel like, where did the time go? Because it felt like yesterday I was watching the NFL draft I believe that was 2004. I'm watching the NFL draft in my living room, and I'm seeing the announcement. Like, I'm seeing the Eli Manning being introduced to the Giants. It seems like yesterday that happened, and it's like the time's gone by quick. Seeing like a guy you remember as a rookie have his number retired like that, that's weird. And then I'm seeing like players like seeing like Piazza in the Hall of Fame, and you're like, and you freaking like remember my high school days, and that jersey still fits me. And there's times you may have seen me wear that jersey on the show, that the Black Mets jersey, the Piazza jersey, or the mm-hmm. I just like to call it a throwback. It felt weird seeing it with the whole thing, because it felt like yesterday, like a player that was freaking part of my high school days. Like,
yeah.
Like his number would be. I'm seeing his number retired, so it's like weird seeing that.
Well, Dan, we're at that age now where we're seeing all the guys that we grew up with, you know, now become legendary status, you know, eligible, like having their numbers retired, like you said about Eli. And like we saw with Piazza, and seeing all these guys become Hall of Fame eligible. You know, it's funny you bring this up too, right off the bat. I was going to save it for later in the show, but let's just jump right into it right now. If you haven't seen the MLB Hall of Fame election results came out the other day, and we now know the 2024 MLB Hall of Fame class, and it's Adrian Beltre, Todd Helton, and Joe Mauer. Now, you know, what do you think of this class, Dan? I mean, definitely a pretty good class so far, right?
Yeah, I think a pretty good. But I'm saying, if you're going to elect, but once again, just like I said with Scott Rowland, if you're going to put Todd Helton in the whole thing, that now I kind of do agree. Maybe he does have good numbers, even though he did play in Colorado with that thin air. But I have to give credit; he was a good player anyway. I feel like even without the thin air, but I feel like if you're going to put like players like Todd Helton in the Hall of Fame, then put Keith in the Hall of Fame already. Put him in the Hall of Fame. I feel it's one of the biggest injustices that Keith Hernandez is not in the Hall of Fame. I can tell you this. I know this is something I think that Jerry Seinfeld should have this honor reserved for him. You know, I made the joke, oh, Jerry, drive him to the Cooperstown if he gets inducted. We will personally volunteer to drive Keith to the Hall, to Cooperstown if he was okay with that. If he got inducted to the Hall of Fame, we would personally take the honor if he was okay with that. We're just putting it right there on the table, Keith. If you get into the Hall of Fame, and Howie Rose agrees he needs to be in the Hall of Fame, we would gladly volunteer to drive you to Cooperstown for the ceremony.
The offer is out there, Keith. Absolutely, Dan. I totally agree with you on that. And you know what? You really just read my mind, too, because when we look at this Hall of Fame ballot, right, when we break it down, Adrian Beltre is a slam dunk. Adrian Beltre, 3,000-plus hit, great defender. That's a guy that is a Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. Joe Mauer, in my opinion, you know, with the numbers as a catcher, you know, I know they list him as a catcher first baseman, but let's be honest, most of Joe Mauer's numbers were done as a catcher, so you have to give him the benefit of that doubt too. And I don't begrudge him going in the Hall of Fame one bit. Now Todd Helton too, I agree with you, his numbers are borderline. The guy had 2,500 hits, but let's be honest, he was a first baseman, and the fact that he had a .316 batting average, that is great and very impressive. But like you said, he played in Colorado, so his batting average was definitely inflated a little bit. And for only 316 home runs to be playing all of your career in Colorado seems a bit light, too. I mean, not to mention the guy was only a five-time All-Star. So, yeah, I mean, look, if you're going to make him a Hall of Famer, and I'm not saying that Todd Helton is completely undeserving. If it was up to me, I wouldn't have him in the Hall of Fame. But also, if you're going to have guys like Harold Baines in the Hall of Fame, that opens the door for guys like Todd Helton, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Also, I got to say about three major snubs that need to be on in the Hall of Fame next year. Need to be. One is I got to mention, of course, Billy Wagner. I feel like for a while it's like we thought it was kind of like wondering if it was a good idea bringing. You know, there was a debate about closers getting into the Hall of Fame, but then when people saw like how dominant a guy like Mariano Rivera was, then we realized, yeah, I guess like, these closers deserve that kind of credit and that honor. And then once that happened, we knew that you might well induct Lee Smith, and then Trevor Hoffman, you know, they got inducted. But then I feel like if those guys were pretty much closers most of their career. The bulk of their career, Billy Wagner was definitely, I feel, definitely was a great closer. I actually talked to him a little. I thought he was really great in the panel, hearing him talk about career. Man, how could you not have a lot of respect for this guy who actually sort of had an injury in it young in his life, and he switched to. He just became a he was he as a kid was a lefty, injured him, had an injury, but decided to just power through and not quit and realize, you know what, he could probably somehow figure out how to switch to being a lefty, and it worked out very well. A fine career, and another one who should be in Hall of Fame.
Dan, actually, before you move on, I'd like to just interject my opinion on Billy Wagner real quick. And I think Billy Wagner is a fine player. I like Billy Wagner. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I think Billy Wagner was a very good regular season pitcher. But let's not forget that a lot of the thing that separated guys like Mariano Rivera, you know, and even Trevor Hoffman outside of a couple of games in the playoffs was their playoff resume, you know what I mean? And even a guy like Curt Schilling, I feel like his candidacy should be revived for what he did in the postseason. Billy Wagner was not a big game pitcher. I like Billy Wagner. He compiled a lot of good regular season stats, but in my opinion, he's a very good player, but not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. All right. I definitely do agree about the Curt Schilling thing. The guy was a great pitcher, and he was money in the big spots and high pressure situations. I mean, I'm shocked he isn't in the Hall of Fame. Another one that said about this year's ballot, I'm surprised Carlos Beltran didn't get it. That guy was, I mean, we all, I mean, I know a lot of us Met fans are probably still upset about that one at bat, but if you take away that one little at bat in game seven of the 2006 NLCS, Carlos Beltran was a great player. That he was a great hitter, and he was just a great defender.
Especially I feel like as a switch hitter. You know, that definitely helps his case too, being a switch hitter.
Yeah, it's a switch hitter, and I just feel like he just also just kind of had that sort of veteran leadership on the teams he played for. I feel like mm-hmm. he was a big factor in that 2006 run that I mean those years in the Mets were contenders during this time. I feel like he played a big role in that, and I feel like it rubbed off on the other players that were on that team. I feel like he definitely deserves to do that, and I feel like I don't know what decision he would make, what hat he would make a decision to wear. He probably, because he had, I guess, maybe a lot of bold numbers with the Mets, even though he did win a championship with the Astros. He could easily go with just a blank hat, but if he wanted to choose the Mets, I would have no problem with that decision. And if the Mets kind of wanted to retire at 15, I would have no problem with that. I definitely feel like the Mets fans need to give him a lot of credit. He was definitely one of the greatest Mets of all time.
Yeah, he gets killed that one at bat, and that's not fair.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So he definitely needs to be there. Another snub, and I forget this. I know Bartolo Colon didn't get in, but is he still eligible on next year's ballot? Did he get enough votes?
I'm not sure. I didn't see him on there. I know the lowest one that I noticed was David Wright at six.
Yeah, because I saw Bartolo got a number. He definitely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, Bartolo. That guy just had he pitched for a long time, and that guy just, even into, like, he was pitching into his 40s, and he was getting a job done, even in his 40s.
I like Bartolo, but, I mean, he's got, like, a 4 ERA in his career, you know?
Yeah, but I kind of feel like that's maybe borderline question mark. Another one I feel like maybe probably, I guess maybe could be borderline, but I feel like definitely was a great hitter. I feel like Gary Sheffield was, he definitely put up some great numbers as a ball player.
Sheffield did, but the only thing holding him back for all those years, you know, was the steroid allegations. That was, you know, otherwise he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah. That definitely another one. I think that was probably, but when I'm looking at the people here, borderline, I feel like Andrew Jones might be borderline, because I feel like I don't know if he really put up the numbers or maybe the longevity, but I know during some of the bulk of his career, he was a good all around player, and definitely played a factor into those. As much as I hate the Braves and hated losing to them during those years, he was a big factor in one of the longest consecutive streaks of a team making the playoffs in sports. He was a big factor. Andrew Jones was a really big factor. I feel a big factor in that, into the Braves having that long streak.
Yeah, dude, how many times did the Mets hit a shallow fly ball to center field where you'd think, okay, this thing's going to fall in, only for Andrew Jones to snag it at the last second, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I could tell you how many times I was like, maybe like, you know, cause I'm like, you know, that reaction, like you're thinking, and then you think it's going to fall in, and you're about to jump out of your seat. And yep. then it just going again. I cannot tell you that. So I remember that. Another one. I feel like that might be. I feel like maybe held back maybe a little bit maybe by the Hall of Fame committee for his maybe there was maybe some steroid allegations, especially during his time. I feel like during the times he was with the Dodgers, he got caught twice, Manny Ramirez, but. I definitely am surprised Manny Ramirez's number hasn't been retired by the Red Sox. Because I feel like if you look, yeah, that one doesn't surprise that one surprised me, because I feel like if you look at the Red Sox, their history, especially those years, I feel it was years leading up to that moment that they finally broke a long drought. I mean, Manny Ramirez was a big factor in that.
You know,
I'm
that's a
surprised.
good
I'm
point,
surprised.
actually. Like,
Yeah,
I can understand that the Hall of Fame not putting him in, because, you know, the Hall of Fame has these steroid rules and everything. But, you know, for the Red Sox, why would you care about that stuff? He had all these great moments for them, right? So you'd think that's a good point, that I'm also surprised they haven't retired his number yet.
Yeah, I'm surprised at that. I mean, you still mentioned the Red Sox fans, Manny Ramirez, and they speak highly of him. I just went to the Red Sox there was at one of my old jobs. There was a Red Sox fan, right? And what happened was I was opening a pack of baseball cards, and I came across a two out, and I don't know, I was gifted like a pack of like assorted from a couple of years. I came across a 2004 Manny Ramirez card. I gave that card to a Red Sox fan, that Red Sox fan, and that Red Sox fan was the look on that Red Sox fan eyes, like her eyes was like lighting up with like nostalgia about that season.
Yeah.
So
Well, you know,
it's
you
like
could really
that's.
trace that when Manny Ramirez was a free agent in 2000, and there were rumors that he was going to sign with the Yankees, because you remember he's from the Bronx, and you could really trace the end of the Yankee dynasty and the beginning of the Red Sox ending that curse and then winning a couple of more championships after that. The beginning of that was Manny Ramirez signing with the Red Sox in 2000, right?
Yeah, I just feel like that's such a big thing that I'm surprised he hasn't had that honor. Another one I feel like maybe could be borderline Hall of Fame. I feel like you could argue a case for him being in the Hall of Fame and not being in the Hall of Fame. I feel that probably I wouldn't be I wouldn't mind it if he got inducted. Andy Pennant. I mean, if it wasn't for the steroid thing, if it wasn't for the steroid thing, I think Andy Pettit would have probably been in the hall, probably would have been in the Hall of Fame, because that guy, he was, he's one of the guys that you look at that was part of that core four, that was a part of that entire Yankee dynasty. Those championships in 96, 98, 99, 2000, and 2009. Andy Pettit's part of those four that were on all those championship teams that I mentioned.
Yeah, and you know that there's one other interesting fact about Andy Pettit's candidacy, right? So Andy Pettit in his career is 256 and 153. He's 103 games over 500. Every other pitcher in the history of baseball that is 100 games over 500 or more is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so that's like if he didn't do that, if he didn't really do that steroid thing, there would have been, it would have been another one that would have made me feel old, because as much as I dislike the Yankees and stuff, that was, he is, if people talk to me about the players like years from now, if like the younger generation asks me about the player, you know how we maybe ask the older generation about the players that they knew and stuff, about what that was like. He'd be one of the names that people would be asking me about. Like, he'd be one of the names I'd be mentioning when people ask would be asking me like, "Oh yeah, what were some of the big star, the big star athletes from around your time, when your youth that you remember?" He'd be one of the names I would mention.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. No doubt about it. Andy Pettit, you know, I think he's a borderline candidate, but man, he's got a lot of stuff in his favor, no doubt about it. So you really couldn't argue if he didn't make it. But before we move on from baseball, though, I also wanted to take a quick look at the hot stove, man. And I continue to be frustrated by the Mets, lack of movement on the free agent market, where, you know, okay, they signed Manaea and they got a couple of other low key guys. But you see guys here that could really help this team. We've heard the Mets need bullpen help, right? From the GM, I mean, not the GM, I'm sorry. He's the president of baseball operations, David Stern. We've heard from him that they need bullpen help and they need a DH. And a Aroldis Chapman goes to the Pirates, a guy who the Mets were rumored to be in on. Rhys Hoskins goes to the Brewers, another guy who the Mets are rumored to be in on. What are they doing, man? What's the plan for this season?
I just have no idea, and I feel like these are two names that they missed out on. Chapman, I kind of debated on if the Mets should have went after him, because I just feel like he just doesn't. He just from what I've seen when he was with the Yankees, which I feel is like, I guess maybe a more a comparable, similar high pressure team playing for. I just kind of feel like he was kind of not cut out to like pitch in a high pressure market like New York. I feel like, but Hoskins, I feel like. We should have went after him.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have liked to see Hoskins. Big right-handed bat, no doubt about that. But Chapman, like you said, he's done it before with the Yankees, so you would have thought that he would have been able to replicate that with the Mets, but I guess that was not in the works, unfortunately. He goes to Pittsburgh and becomes a trade chip at the deadline. You know, if the Pirates are having a crappy season, which all signs point to, yes. Maybe he'll be in the plans for another team down the line. I don't think the way this Mets offseason is playing out right now, I don't think they're going to be making any big-time deals for a playoff run at the trade deadline. But hopefully I'm wrong on that.
Yeah. I feel like there's a possibility they will. But like I said this a couple of weeks earlier that I can't see them going after a player that's going to be a 1 year rental. They're going to want to go after someone that's in the, if they're going to give up whatever amount of prospects, whatever, they're not going to want to do it for a rental. I'm getting the consensus. They'll do it for someone who has maybe another year or two in team control. I feel like that's going to place a factor. I've gotten the consensus from interviews and from when I've seen Steve Cohen speak they're not going to go for a rental, but if there's a player that they want that like has team control, then that might sway things in a decision to go make that trade. I feel like so it's going to be a lot to look at this year where the Mets are at the trade deadline and also where some of the other teams where they are at the deadline. So that's gonna, I feel like this is gonna be one of those things that we're just gonna have to wait to see where we are at the half to really get a consensus of this team, because I feel like there is that additional wild card that now there's like three wild cards. So it's a game changer. I feel it is.
And in a lot of ways too, because the thing that sucks about that extra wild card too, is that if you are a contending team, it's a little bit harder to take, sellable players off the crappier teams, because a lot of these crappier teams can convince themselves that they're still in the playoff race. You know what I mean? So it kind of depletes the market a little bit.
Yes, I kind of feel like the trade market maybe sometimes, I feel like isn't always as active as we've seen in the past, because there's more teams in contention. I mean, on one hand, when they came up with that third wild card, I'm thinking Rob Manfred, the people that were in charge were thinking more money, and team owners were thinking more money if the team's in contention. They're thinking the longer the team's in contention, the more tickets they can sell tickets and, TV revenue. Even though I can't really say team that how the team's doing affects TV revenue, because I feel like the high viewer numbers is always in the local market, it's always consisting, because it doesn't take a lot to turn on a TV and watch the game. It's not like you're spending money and stuff to go to the game. So it's a big difference in terms of revenue from actually attending the game and TV viewership numbers.
That's
but
a good point.
The big thing is the revenue of the teams attending the games is probably a big thing, and even revenues around the local markets of the teams, like the, because you know all the businesses that you know that are making money around when these teams are in the playoffs, there's bars that are getting a lot of money. A lot of these bars in the local markets, they pretty much want every playoff series to go into a game seven because they know they get the maximum amount of revenue they could get. And pretty much the way these networks will really make money off of, you know, like a broadcast, let's say an event like the World Series, they're not rooting, but they do kind of admit, I do kind of admit that they do kind of want to, they kind of do secretly want the World Series to go to seven games because they know they will get the most they could possibly get if, like, the World Series goes to seven games in terms of revenue. Seven means the most revenue they could get. So they want yeah. that.
No doubt about it. And they also want, like, the bigger market teams and everything like that, too. And, you know, that leads us right into our next topic of the NFC Championship game and the AFC Championship game, Championship Sunday, going down this upcoming Sunday. And we got a couple of really big games on hand, Dan, with a couple of, big city lucrative markets coming into play here. We'll start off with the NFC Championship game, Dan. What do you think about the Lions and 49ers, Detroit appearing in its first NFC Championship game since Barry Sanders and the 1991 team lost to the Washington Redskins?
I feel like this game is going to be Detroit winning in a high-scoring game. Just my gut feeling seems like Detroit's just they've shown up with low expectations, and they seem to have this. I feel like this Cinderella run, reminiscent of the 2007 New York Giants. I feel like I just feel like it's that kind of a run.
Yeah, I mean, not a bad comp, man. I mean, that 07 Giants run is pretty legendary. The only difference being that the Giants were doing it on the road. But, I mean, you got to give credit. Detroit, if they're going to get it done, is going to have to get it done in San Francisco. Their first two games were home games, this being the NFC Championship game. Yeah, and, you know, Jared Goff has been here before. He's done it. Went to the NFC Championship game with the Rams. And went to the Super Bowl that year. I believe it was 2018 they did that. And, hey, you got to give all the credit in the world to Detroit. And I agree with you, man. I think Detroit is going to win it too. I don't know why. And I'm getting a little scared off that too because I feel like a lot of people are saying that. But something about the Niners just doesn't feel right to me right now. I don't know what it is. But something just seems a little bit off. I mean, they were trailing that entire game against Green Bay and just managed to pull it out in the end. And I feel like Detroit is just on a really hell of a roll right now. So, I think the Lions are going to have their first ever Super Bowl appearance. And that's going to be crazy, right? I mean, you got to give it to the Lions and the Lions fans for all that suffering paying off if they get there this year, right?
Yeah, you got to give it to the Lions and Lions fans, especially with how maybe the economy has been going in Detroit. I mean, we all know about how that. I just feel like it's got to be a feel good story for the, you know, for the people of Detroit to have something that they could be happy about with everything that's going on. In there, that's got to feel happy about that. Plus that, I know our good pal Dave Landau is happy, and I'm hoping he'll get to see a championship.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. I mean, they haven't won a Stanley Cup in 15 years. They haven't won a World Series since 1984, and they haven't had a Super Bowl ever. The last time they won was the NFL Championship game. Back in the day, I think I want to say 1963 was the last time they won. But it's been a long time coming, man.
Yep, exactly. The last time they won, like that, like I said, the precursor to the Super Bowl, that was pre-Super Bowl era. That was pre-merger with the NFL and the and AFL that led to the what's known as the modern day NFL. That predates the modern day.
Sorry about that. I'm here.
Say to put into context. That's a couple of years removed, potentially, if I'm correct, if my math is correct, from when the official when the merger pretty much happened of the two rival football leagues that formed the NFL we know today. So that's how far back you got.
The first Super Bowl was 1967, and the merger didn't happen until 1970.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like predates that. Even though I guess you could say the kind of the merger happened with like the first Super Bowl, because when I read about that, the merger kind of was like already on track the moment they came up with the Super Bowl.
Technically the Jets have only been to one Super Bowl. But they've never been the AFC champions. When they won it in 1968, they're the AFL champions. So at that point, it still was a little murky until they switched over to the AFC in 1970.
Yep, that is. But that's hard to believe that technically your guys that won Super Bowl was essentially pre-modern NFL.
Yeah, right. That's how long it's been.
Wasn't
the Toronto Maple Leafs going back to 1968?
Yeah, which I think far back you can go all the way back to like the Nixon administration, and the moon landing was just something that was it still was like in the planning stages still. Like it hadn't even happened yet, to put it to context.
January 12th, 1969, the Jets won the Super Bowl, and man walked on the moon July 20th, 1969. So it was over 7 months before we actually walked on the moon.
Yeah. That's a far back. And if my history is correct, I think the Beatles were still together when the Jets won that Super Bowl. Am I correct?
Yeah, the Beatles didn't break up until 1970.
That's how far back, like you got the last time you guys won a Super Bowl, the Beatles were still together. That's crazy to think that's how far back you got to go for that.
That's the Jets, man. That's the Jets. You can't say that about the Knicks though, because the Knicks won in 73, and and the Beatles broke up 3 years before that, so. So let's keep rolling along here as the we want to take a look at the AFC championship game now, as the Chiefs, great game against the Bills on Sunday night, man. We didn't get to cover it though, but 27-24, amazing game. Heartbreaks for Josh Allen and Buffalo, and just a terrible way to lose the game, but the Chiefs hold on. They go to another AFC championship game. This time, the first one ever for them on the road, Chiefs at Ravens. Baltimore hosting its first AFC championship game since 1971, when the Raiders were visiting the then Baltimore Colts. So a little history going there, too.
Yeah, that is as far back. But I just got to say about this game, my gut feeling says that the Ravens are going to win this game. And I feel like it might be a big defensive stop, and just one big offensive play, I feel like, is just gonna play a factor into the Ravens winning this by probably a small margin, I feel like. And hopefully, yeah. I gotta say something to the Baltimore Ravens. You have one job, and that's to keep the Super Bowl Taylor Swift free, to save us from having to see shots of Taylor Swift and her luxury box in a I think it's what is it, Allegiant Stadium that we in the state this in Las Vegas where the Super Bowl is going to be. You have one job to prevent us from having to be seen that a million times during the Super Bowl, having to see Taylor Swift and that evil looking smile of hers. She just has this evil. Doesn't she have the? Doesn't she have this evil look on her face lately? You notice that?
I didn't notice that it was evil, but you know what, Dan? Going for the Chiefs, though, I can see what you're saying. I can see it.
Yeah, she just has this. I don't know. She just has this evil look. Like it's like one of those things where you got these, you know, these females that are, you know, these. I don't know how to say. It. Like she's just got this evil look that. I'm surprised
are
she hasn't been casted as a.
Are you calling her a succubus, yes, Dan?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah, like she could play the. I feel like she could play the role of a succubus in a movie. I feel like.
Oh my god! I didn't think we were gonna be talking about this today, but you know what though? When you talk about Taylor Swift, nothing's really off the table, and yeah, man. So you think right now, you know, you're saying that you think that the Ravens are going to win this game. Is it going to be, so we're talking a Ravens-Lions Super Bowl right now. That's your thought process?
Yup. That's what I'm predicting. We're going to see a Ravens-Lions Super Bowl matchup with we're literally in a city where that's full of gambling. You could, and a game that you could pretty much bet on just about any little thing that could possibly happen at the Super Bowl. I mean, I don't know if you remember this. One year, remember that Janet Jackson incident?
Yeah.
I don't know if did you get to see it? Well, you saw it live also? Because I saw it live.
Yes, I saw actually, it live, yeah.
This was like one of the first times we had like a DVR. This was like one of the first times we had a DVR, and my mother noticed it. She noticed it, and out of curiosity to be shocked that something like that actually happened, got caught. Just out of shock that actually got. I couldn't believe that got caught on camera. Like I would not expect that to be get caught on camera, even if it was accidentally or whatever. I hit the rewind button to see if that's what was seen, and you know, I could hit pause and holy shit, that somehow that got caught on live TV. I don't know with the potential. I kind of believe the wardrobe malfunction based on like the description of the outfit and supposedly what was, I guess during the performance, what was supposed to be done. Like it seems like Justin Timberlake was supposed to like make people think that he pulled off, but it wasn't. Might have been. I've heard stories about wardrobe malfunctions. You know, like he just wanted to like make people think that, and then it wasn't. But there probably was a wardrobe malfunction. But it changed how the sports broadcasting, the delay in a, you know, the, you know how a lot of broadcasts are in a delay. It changed the delay and. Is I feel like it's kind of the reason why when you're, and I noticed it more ever since that incident when I'm at a Met game and you know I've had the rate you know the radio feed of the game, I noticed the delay was bigger because it was maybe a few seconds. Now it's kind of a moment behind, like you know you see like let's say a home run happen. And then a little bit afterwards, you hear the call of that home run happen.
I feel like that
delay has happened as a result of this. Well, the following year, when Paul McCartney was performing the halftime show, there was, and get this, I was laughing at this because actually one of the things you could bet, prop bets you could bet on a Super Bowl, Paul McCartney pulling off his shirt. You could actually bet on if that was going to happen. As silly as it is, you were actually able to place a bet on whether that was going to happen or not, as silly as that was.
Oh, you could bet on anything, to be honest. You could even bet. They bet on the length of the national anthem now. I remember Gino, the great Gino Visconti, was placing bets on that. And, yeah, I mean, it's crazy, the amount of betting. And, you know, as a matter of fact, we should definitely we'll be doing a Super Bowl special, right? I think, Dan, we'll do a little Super Bowl bonus episode maybe before the Super Bowl. And we should definitely discuss a lot of the funny prop bets they got going on there, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a couple of jokes I can make. Of course, that depending on the Super Bowl matchup will determine what jokes I'm probably about to make on this, because I'm waiting for the Super Bowl matchup before I make any of these jokes. But you could kind of see where I'm gonna go there with some of these jokes. But yeah, I'm already predicting some of the things I'm sure you could place a bet on. And leading up to the Super Bowl, we will be going over some of those prop bets you could go probably even if you're attending the game, because the Super Bowl is in Las Vegas, so you could easily go to a casino the day before the game and place bets on the game you're attending if you're attending the Super Bowl in Vegas, very true. And I'm pretty sure you could bet on the amount of drunken disorderly cases handled by the police department of Las Vegas after the Super Bowl.
I'm sure that'll definitely be a prop too. So I agree with you on the NFC Championship side. As you know, we're both in agreement on the Detroit Lions, but I do think, I don't know, man, I don't trust the Ravens yet, and the Chiefs are a proven thing. I just feel like the Chiefs are going to find some way to win this game. So I'm going to be taking the Chiefs. You're going to be taking the Ravens. We both got the Lions, and I'm hoping you're right, because I don't want to see the Chiefs in another Super Bowl, but I don't know. It's tough to pick against them at this point. But, yeah, let's keep it rolling along, though, Dan. And I want to take a look at we'll look at our MSG teams right now. I want to start off with the Knicks, though. Got to give it to the Knicks. Me and you were talking about that painful Rangers loss last night before the before it went live. But we also have to mention just a great job by the Knicks. Coming back last night, 32-18 fourth quarter run to get this victory, 108-103 over the Brooklyn Nets, fourth straight victory, and they're 10-2 since the OG trade. Man, you know, even when they're not playing their best, the Knicks are still finding ways to win. Brunson and Randle dropping 30 points a game. Tom Thibodeau is pressing every right button now, right, Dan?
Yeah, I just feel like the Knicks are gonna just. I feel like they're already setting up to go on one heck of a Cinderella run during the playoffs, I feel like. I just feel like this is a team that people are just, I feel like they're just sleeping on, not realizing how good of a team this Knicks team's going to be. And I just have this gut feeling that we could be seeing a summer like hopefully like that spring in June of 1994, we're watching a playoff run for both teams in the garden.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's definitely setting up that way right now. You know, an interesting thing in the NBA too is that one of the teams that the Knicks are going to have to worry about if they go on a playoff run is the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Milwaukee Bucks just hired Doc Rivers as their head coach midseason. So an interesting switch there. You know, just one other thing to worry about in the Eastern Conference. But, you know, hey, we've been saying it ever since this OG trade, too, that hopefully it should just be the prelude to a bigger move at the deadline. And, hell, I mean, right now, if the Knicks, they're 10 games over 500, they're playing great ball. And, you know, if they're able to make one more splash move, because when I look at their roster and I look at the Knicks rotation, it looks like it's just, I mean, everybody's playing phenomenal right now, so you have to give them that. But I feel like they're one player short in that rotation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like that, and I just have a gut feeling that Donovan Mitchell is going to be that guy. He's going to come here to the Knicks. I just have a gut feeling this time it's going to happen, and I just can't wait to see how this one turns out, because that'll be like, this will be the first time I feel like the Knicks just have this bona fide team that I feel like every championship team has that star player and has maybe one other star player that they just meant to build around that star. Like I feel like, and we're,
yeah,
and it's shaping up for that. And it's,
yeah,
great
no
to finally
it.
See for once. It'd be great for once to see the Knicks finally get that piece for once. Because we've seen,
yeah,
these,
and you know, they
so many times we fall short on it.
They've added Brunson, and he's taken a lot of the load off Randall. And, you know, if they could get somebody to now take the load a little bit off Brunson, then, you know, we got a three-headed monster, just like, the, you know, everybody in the NBA sets out to build. You know, the Nets tried it a couple of years ago with, you know, obviously everything that they had going on with KD and Kyrie and James Harden. That didn't work out, but, you know, the Knicks with Brunson here and Randall, and I mean, hey, if they're going to bring in a guy like Donovan Mitchell, like you said, or maybe this different guy that, you know, Leon Rose can find the deadline or something like that, that can kind of fill that role, you know, we'll see what's going on there. But either way, right now, with the run the Knicks are going on and the way they've been playing since they made this trade with Toronto, they're only putting themselves in a better position. I mean, they're 10 games over 500, you know, and in the NBA, you know, the NBA is not like baseball where you see teams, you know, take off, at certain point, you know, or like where you see teams, if you're in the upper echelon of the league, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, those seeds, yeah, those guys are going to start mounting wins and building up. But the rest of the league usually stays around 500 until late when everybody starts pulling away and making their playoff push. But so that for the Knicks to hit this 10 game over 500 point at this point in the schedule, that makes me feel really good about this team, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I just feel like this is just the most exciting Knicks team I've seen in ages. So I just feel like there's gonna be a lot of hoops and hockey playoffs going on in my living room, viewing in my living room coming around that when it gets to that time.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, you mentioned the hockey, and I've been holding my nose since last night, because to get the stink out of that loss, but let's chop it up right now and see what's going on. Rangers lose 3-2 in overtime at San Jose. San Jose was 1-26-2 heading into the third period, went trailing heading into the third period, and now they're 2-26-2 because they came back, they erased the 2-0 lead, took the game to overtime and won it. Just a horrific loss for the Rangers, who have had a lot of them lately. And, you know, this has not been the one thing that I keep hearing from Rangers fans is, it's just one game. They're still in first place. You know, they're still playing good overall. Let me show you this, Dan, because this is a very, very telling stat. So the Rangers started off the first 22 games this season 17-4-1. Since then, the last 25 games, the Rangers are 12-12-1. They've been nothing more than a 500 team. Now, I understand that injuries have accounted for a lot of that. You know, Kaapo Kakko has missed a lot of time, and, you know, they've had, you know, guys filling in. Filip Hedl's been out and still is out. Adam Fox missed 10 games in that time. So they have had a lot of injuries to deal with. Nick Bonino was down. But 12-12-1 is not an aberration. This is what we've seen, a 500 team for the last 2+ months. And something has to change, Dan. I don't know if the Rangers have to make a move, like, you know, make a little trade to try to, because it really looks like, too, the lack of top-notch, high offensive scoring is really coming back to bite this team in the ass. You know, swinging and missing, I like Lafreniere and Kako, but those guys have not played up to their draft position. And right now it's really killing the Rangers, to be honest.
Yeah, I just feel like they need to make that move at the trade deadline, without a doubt. They need to make that big splash at the trade deadline. Also, I feel like late in games, they need to avoid the late in games of teams being on their goalie too late in the game. I feel like that's the worst part, and they need to cut back on that scoring close together. We've seen last couple of games. I don't know if you noticed that. Like we give up two goals in within seconds. They need to cut down on that. And
you're right. I'm sorry.
And I got to say about this game, I was at, I couldn't really like stay up to watch the whole game because the sunrise hours I work at my job, even though it's a short walk from my house, so maybe I can kind of sleep a little longer because I just have a short walk to where I work, you know, loading the UPS trucks. But anyway, I come back home the next day. I had the rest of the game because I fell asleep somewhere halfway into the game, and I'm watching the rest of the game when I come back home, right? You know, eating my post-work breakfast, watching it. I was upset. I threw an empty water bottle on the TV, and thank God that water bottle was empty, because I cannot express how much damage that I would have done to the TV because of how these TVs are, how modern-day TVs can't take a beating. That TV would have been damaged if that water bottle was not empty. And I think even that empty water bottle could have done damage at this rate with how sensitive these TVs are these days. I'm surprised my TV survived that, because I threw an empty water bottle at the TV. So upset I was.
It was just a
plastic Poland Spring bottle threw it at the TV. I was upset.
Well, you know, Dan, one guy that was making me want to do that too last night was Mika Zibanejad. And, you know, I got to say, this is one guy that I think has to be called out. I like Mika a lot. Mika's been a great player for the Rangers. He hasn't been having as great of a season this year. But, I mean, let's be honest. On that final sequence in overtime, he got penalized, right? There was a guy, they knocked the stick out of his hand. It should have been called a penalty by the official, and it wasn't. But the thing that really pisses me off, aside from the bad call, even worse, was the fact that Mika Zibanejad let's not forget, it's overtime. It's 3-on-3. So Mika Zibanejad gets a stick knocked out of his hand, and he goes over to bitch to the official rather than going to pick his stick up and finishing the play. That cost the Rangers the game, because then you have the wide-open guy on the left side of the net. Boom, he puts that in. Game over. Shesterkin was hung out to dry. There was nothing he could do to stop that puck. Mika Zibanejad cost the Rangers the game by complaining to the official.
Yeah, that there is no place for that in overtime. It is not. It's not time to get into an argument with the Zebras. That is if you. I mean, you got to move on quickly from that bad call. You got to. It's like all focus has to be on that game, on what's going on in front of you when it's an overtime because of that.
Yeah. You know, especially against a team like the Sharks, where you have to win that game. The Rangers only getting 1 point against that garbage team was just terrible. But, you know, I actually did feel good for David Quinn, the former Ranger coach who's now over there in San Jose. You know, I feel like a lot of Rangers fans don't like him for whatever reason. I thought David Quinn was a pretty decent coach here for the time he was here. I mean, let's not forget, he didn't have the most talented roster. It was a bunch of rookies for the most part. And Artemi Panarin and Zibanejad. And, you know, so I got to give credit to David Quinn. So I'm sure he felt pretty good after the win last night, but I know us Rangers fans didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I got to say about David Quinn, I wonder if he's related to Colin Quinn, because he's kind of got that smile, you know, that smile that Colin has. Doesn't he have that same smile? You know what I'm talking about that smile that Colin has. He's got that smile.
I hear you.
I wonder if he's related to Colin Quinn. He's got that same
smile. It could be that's a good call. That's a good call, man. Now on Friday, just to finish up here, Friday is the Rangers and the Vegas Golden Knights at the Garden. They played, you know, these two teams played a week or two ago, and the Golden Knights smashed us in Vegas 5-1. So you really got to hope that coming off a horrific loss to the Sharks on Tuesday night, that the Rangers are going to be coming out flying tomorrow because, knowing in the back of their minds that they got smacked by the Golden Knights 2 weeks ago, knowing in the back of their minds that they blew that game against the Sharks the other night, you know, this is the Stanley Cup champions coming into your house. You better be up for the task, right?
Yeah, I just feel like we better be on all cylinders. I hope the fans are on all cylinders for this game. And I feel like the Rangers really need to shorten up on the turnovers to really win this game. I feel like the last time they played, I feel like they just didn't shore up that, and you really, against this team, against the Las Vegas Golden Knights, you can't be giving up goals like back-to-back goals, unanswered goals within seconds against this team, I feel like. So it's like that kind of mistake you pay for against this team, I feel like. So they really have to shore up those parts of their game to win this on Friday.
Yeah, you're definitely right, man. They're going to have to be on all cylinders going into that game. And Dan, speaking of that, we're going to be going on all cylinders next week. We're going to be doing episode 100. We're going to be taping it on January 31st, but it's going to be coming out on February 1st, episode 100 on YouTube. We're going to have a special guest that we just confirmed today. We're going to make the announcement on social media in the next 24 to 48 hours. So stay tuned to our newly verified, our ex-profile, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, BSith_podcast. And that's pretty cool. We're verified on there now, right?
Yeah, and because the show's account is now verified, because of the blue check mark is why the reason that I was trying to debate what team gear I was going to wear today, I just decided to go with the Rangers and have an appearance. But well, because I liked when I'm at a Rangers game, I'm referred to because of the Broadway hat as Broadway Bobo. So I felt like, yeah, we kind of need an appearance for Broadway Bobo today because of the blue shirts, the blue check mark.
Very cool, man. I like it a lot. We got the blue check mark. We got the blue shirt. We got the Broadway hat. Broadway Bobo is in the building. We're going to have a special guest in the building next week, so please stay tuned to our social media and check that out. But Dan, real quick before we get out of here, do you have anything you'd like to plug for yourself?
Sure. I got to plug my Twitter account, Bobo1003NYC, that you see there on the screen. Give that to follow. Don't forget also to follow me on Instagram, Bobo718DK, which is also the same handle I go by on Treads. Also on YouTube, it's one word, Daniel Curlin. You're gonna get to see a video that a lot of the people that are watching this that have early access that subscribe to our Patreon got early access to. It's gonna be on YouTube tomorrow. Our little video, our little adventure, being on our trip to New Jersey. What it was like, or I guess you could say our trek to New Jersey, because you kind of had to take quite a bit of public transportation. Like I kind of felt like we were like that it was like in the movie The Warriors, the way we how we got to the Dojo of Comedy in Morris, New Jersey, where they filmed the show. How we got there, it felt like that. And I made this video documenting that trip out there. And there's a little cameo from Dave and Roy made a cameo in this video because I show a little footage of us, you know, like, as you know, they're getting ready for the show, and you see, you know, and you see us there in the studio before the show. We do a little video, so you kind of, so it was just a lot. It was just a fun video, and I really hope everyone who watches that video enjoys it. And do not forget to click like that video, the thumbs up on that video, and don't forget to hit subscribe on my YouTube, and let us know what you think of it. Also, when you do watch that video, there is a link in the description to the very episode of the Eastside of the Davey Mac Sports program that we were on. So you'll be able to find that episode if you haven't seen it already. That episode, do watch it, and do watch the Davey Mac Sports program. Got to give a shout out to to our friend Eastside Dave. Definitely do watch his show. He does a wonderful job on that show.
Absolutely. Always make sure to check Dave out. As Dave had us on his show 2 weeks ago. Definitely amazing episode, amazing time with the great Davey Mac Sports program. So check that out. Subscribe to Dave's stuff. And thank you everybody for tuning in and supporting us. If you want to support us more, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Best Seat in the House Podcast. Only $5, and you get all of our thoughts on NFL. The NFL postseason and the Super Bowl and everything coming up there. Bunch of extra content as well that we frequently update. So thank you so much for the support. Check us out. Check me out on Twitter at KramerNY and the newly verified account, BSith_podcast. And don't forget us on Instagram at Best Seat in the House Podcast. So thank you once again, everybody, for tuning in. For my co-host, Daniel Bobo Curlin, I'm Rob Kramer. This is the Best Seat in the House Podcast. I will see you next time.